ओम अज्ञानतिलम्बस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्दः श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासुदेवगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो एनीवन हैज एनी क्वेश्चन?
Yes, Prabhu, I posted some questions.
Yeah, we will cover that, yeah. Okay, so now, what is your question, Madhuri? You can start one by one.
Does one incur karma if one does Harinam for a non-devotee who has passed away?
If one does Harinam for a non-devotee?
Who has passed away.
Okay.
Does one incur karma?
That will what? Like, so are you saying that the person will get rid of the karma because some devotee chanted for that?
No, person? I don't know. I'm just asking. I don't know.
Okay, so what happens? Other devotees can share. What do they understand? Like, how this works?
It definitely helps the departed soul.
Okay. Yeah, any other devotees, they would like to comment something on this? No one wants to say anything?
If devotee is on very high stage, he's a pure devotee, then he can do.
Okay. So, yes, that is a good answer. But you have to add more details in that.
Okay.
So, like, there are different levels of devotees. What about a Kanishka?
Yeah. Mm. Different levels of devotees are there, yes. Okay. Yeah, so what about Kanishka, Madhyama, Uttama? So, everyone knows that Uttama, if that Uttama is doing Harinam, then there will be more benefit. So, correspondingly, if the Madhyama and the Kanishka they are doing, then there will be accordingly that much benefit. So, see, actually, it is mentioned that the Kanishka Adhikari can actually liberate 3 generations. Madhyama can liberate 14 generations and Uttama can liberate 100 generations.
21.
This is according to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarita Thakur, this thing. So, liberation means, liberation means that they can get rid of karma, they can get free from karma. But it also depends on their consciousness and their intention at the time of, at the time of death, or you can say that whatever consciousness they have developed for the Lord. So with that particular consciousness, they will get a corresponding result. So if by the association of the devotee, if they become favorable, then probably in the next life they will become devotees themselves. Although they can get free from karma, they might get liberated. But, and see, the liberation is not something that, they will get liberation in the sense, it's not that they will merge in Brahman or they will go back to Godhead. They can go back to Godhead if the devotee is Uttama Adhikari and, very advanced, and by special mercy interference of the devotee, it's possible they might go back to Godhead, but that chance is very rare. So Madhyama, when he does, he is chanting the holy name, so that means he can give liberation, he can reduce the karma of that person. So that benefit that person will definitely get. But whether that person will become a devotee or not, that is depending on the consciousness of the devotee. So in the Bhagavatam, as we know, there is a verse in the second canto. I had just posted this yesterday or before yesterday. I think before yesterday probably. And it mentions that whoever was killed by the Lord or whoever was killed by the devotees of the Lord. Yeah. So whoever was killed by the Lord or the associates of the Lord, they attained impersonal liberation or they went back to Godhead. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that where they went, it actually depends on the consciousness of the person. If they develop service attitude towards the Lord, then, you know, it is possible then they can go back to Godhead. And if they had some kind of impersonal feeling for the Lord, then they will attain the Brahma Jyoti. So, even the demons also, when they come in contact with the devotees of Krishna, now because the associates of Krishna are definitely Nitya Siddha, so they are Uttama Adhikaris, and that's why their bhajan has a lot of power. But Madhyama and Kanishta, they don't have so much power. Although they can definitely liberate the person from their karmas to a great extent. Okay? So now, it all depends.
Who takes the karma, huh? Who takes the karma? Who takes the karma?
What, who?
Who takes the karma
from that person?
See, who takes the karma means, they get rid of karma. And so that basically means the devotees, when they are doing bhajan, so that bhajan is, we get benefit for that bhajan, and our relatives get benefit, because in the Shastra it is mentioned, whoever becomes a devotee, his relatives are benefited. So, you know, your immediate relatives, especially, you know, you are from parent side, from mother and father side, and then your children also. So these are, you know, it depends on what level of devotee you are. So depending on that, how many in your parampara will get liberated, that will depend on your purity also. How many will be benefited, that will depend on the purity of the devotee. So you know, it is not that they are taking karma. You see, generally,
During initiation, it is said Guru takes away the karma.
Yeah, but so, here there is initiation here. Here there is no initiation. The Guru, the devotee is not acting like a Guru. No, he's just...
Can you think your call the hold working now?
Hari Bol. Yeah. So here the devotee is basically trying to help his relative. And he's praying to the Lord. So he's like, see, two things are there. One is that you transfer your potency to a person. Okay, that is one thing. And second thing is that you are praying to the Lord, praying to the parampara to give benefit to that person. So one difference is that the first thing is actually depending on your own strength. And second thing is that you are praying to the Lord. So you are not taking karma for that. Okay, so we are... So in some sense, there might be some transfer of karma because we are trying to help that person come closer to Krishna. Like, you know, generally when we give Krishna consciousness, when we preach, we are also taking karma of people because we are talking to them and then, you know, we have to associate with their mentality and all. So we take their karma also. But it is, so that's the reason, you know, a devotee should have strong sadhana. And the purity has to be there. So in this case also, it is possible, you know, a devotee can take karma. But to what extent, you know, he can take the karma, that is questionable. Because if a person is very sinful and the devotee is trying to save that person or at least benefit that person in some way, but the devotee himself is not very advanced, then that karma will affect his spiritual life. So it is like, you know, we take karma according to our capacity. And that is the reason we pray to the Lord, we pray to our Gurujan, that, see, because we know that we don't have any strength to save anyone. And that is the reason every, you know, whenever we try to benefit someone, we always pray to our Gurujan that kindly, you know, help, like, because we are just assisting them. It is not that we are independent saviors, okay? We are trying to assist our Gurujan. And so because of that, to a lot of extent, you know, we are not taking that much karma. Right? So, if you don't have so much potential, you cannot actually give Krishna to others. Okay, so now how much, to what extent we are taking karma, that probably only Krishna knows. And maybe this is something that a devotee can, maybe they can understand after the person passes away and after the rituals have been done. So, okay, like I can give one example. My own example actually I can share. Very interesting. See, basically, you know, when my grandmother passed away, okay, I want to make sure that everyone is there. Is everyone there now? Everyone has joined till now?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, okay. So everyone, please hear carefully. It's interesting, you know, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, so when my grandmother passed away, so that morning, you know, like I was continuously chanting for her. And then I was also like, mainly I was praying to like Guru Maharaj and praying to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. So because, you know, in Kali Yuga, Gaurnita Eva Kevalam. So Kalavanasti, Vanasti, Vanasti, Gatiranyata. Like Gaurnita actually are the ones who are the most munificent. So I was praying to Guru and Gauranga. And somehow I was just praying that, you know, my grandmother should become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the next life. That is the best destination one can actually attain. So I don't pray that one should go back to Godhead, or, you know, because the problem is that if you go back to Godhead, but then what is your rasa with the Lord? If you have rasa with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that means you attain the highest level of rasa in the spiritual world. Technically, you know, generally. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specially came, you know, came to give Madhura Ras. So the followers of Mahaprabhu are generally actually in the mood of Madhura Ras. It's generally, you know, like, obviously there may be exceptions also. But, whichever thing, you know, whether it is connected to Rasa or anything else, but the most fortunate living entity in Kali Yuga is the one who is actually able to connect with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, okay, in Kali Yuga. Because even great devotees also, great demigods also, Krishna himself also wants to taste the mood of Radha, so he is becoming Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What to speak of all other incarnations of the Lord? They are hankering to get association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to actually render some service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's the reason, you know, we have seen that all the asuras in the previous yugas, they all came in Gaur Lila also, in different forms, to render service to Mahaprabhu. Okay. So, to become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most, you get the maximum fortune by becoming a devotee of Mahaprabhu, even greater than becoming a devotee of Radha and Krishna. Okay. To become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually more exalted. Okay. So, anyways, I was just praying like that continuously. So then, I asked some devotees to get some mahagarland from the temple, Jew temple. And, fortunately what happened is one devotee went, he got the garland, and then, he asked the pujari that whose garland it is. And so when I offered it to my grandmother, so he told me that it is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mahagarland. So then, you know, I was like very happy that the Lord is reciprocating. So that one thing was there. And I did the last rites for my grandmother. Okay. Because I wanted to do it somehow. And you see, generally, the most, the eldest son will do it, right? We all know that. Even in the Bollywood movies also, we have seen that. The eldest son, he will generally do the rights. So my father definitely did not do it. And my elder brother was also there, but he also did not do it. And I wanted to do it anyways, you know, because at least I wanted to give some kind of benefit in terms of, because, you know, I knew that at least I don't have any potency, but I can at least keep chanting and I can remember the Lord whenever the rituals are going on. So that way she will be benefited. So I did, and somehow, I don't know, it became very easy. Like someone came and told me that you can you do the rites? And I said, obviously I will do it. So there was no question of any, you know, discussion or debate or that my brother will do it, I will not do it. I immediately agreed. Well, it was my desire. So that desire also got fulfilled. And so I did the last rites, the funeral ceremony and all that. And then the start ceremony also, I was the one who actually did the, you know, everything. I did not perform, you know, the Brahmana was there. So he was explaining me things and I was doing accordingly. But so whenever I was doing, I was just continuously praying, remembering the Lord and praying to the Lord that, you know, my grandmother can become a devotee of the Lord. So now what happened, after a few days, that time I had just returned from, Bangalore. You know, I had undertaken that Ayurvedic treatment. So, I think this is in 2015 probably, if I remember correctly. 2015, my grandmother passed away. And this was during the, she passed away during Vishwarupa Mahotsav, the Prabhupada, you know, taking sannyas. So that day she passed away, a very auspicious day. So I think it's also Purnima that day. And I think it is next day, Ananta Chaturdashi also probably. So anyway, it was a very auspicious day. After a few days of all these ceremonies, I don't know suddenly what happened, because see, my grandmother, like during the last days, like almost last 2-3 weeks, she was like having a lot of pain, you know, anyone will have that pain. And she was also, you know, continuously itching her body. Like, you know, she was having that feeling of like continuously itching the body, and because, you know, the body becomes very dry and like there is a lot of pain. So, you know, obviously that itching will be there. So I don't know what happened, but, you know, after all this thing got over, after a few days, you know, I got that same thing. Okay. And for almost 1 week, I was not able to sleep only. This is, I think, you know, all devotees know about it, because a long time back.
You mentioned that.
I had shared this experience also, that
yeah.
1 week I'm like, the entire day my body is itching, and I'm trying to contact the Ayurvedic doctor from Bangalore. He's not available, you know, many times. And then finally, I'm able to connect with him, and he is recommending me some kind of medicine, but that is also not working. So that entire one day, you know, see, and that time I also got tonsils. So it was a very deadly combination. I was thinking that, you know, I should give up my body because it was not tolerable. So, you know, for 6-7 days continuously, I think it was 6 days, because I remember I was conducting Siksha Guru classes in my father-in-law's house. So I wanted to make sure that at least on Saturday I should get cured, because, you know, I can at least give the class. So, and anyways, you know, it was a long time because I had been to Bangalore and I returned back. So I think 2-3 weeks had passed without classes. So I did not want to miss giving class. So then what happened is, you know, nothing was working out. And finally, I went to my physician. And physician, she gave me some, you know, medicines. You know, in just one day, one night, everything was cured. Next day, I went to the, you know, to my in-law's house. I gave class also. And I was sharing my experience with the devotees. How in the last 6 days, I was like, you know, something deadly happened actually. So then I probably realized that maybe, you know, I'm not sure about it, okay? Because I cannot handle such kind of karma, okay? So, but maybe, you know, probably I took some of the karma. You know, maybe, you know, it's possible.
Maybe because of your prayer, very sincerely, that she will be...
generally, you know, who does the rites, the especially, you know, this ceremony and all that, so it is a very formal thing. And so the Purohit has to take some karma also, you know, like when you do a yajna or when you perform some kind of ritual ceremony officially. And it is actually good that the, you know, one takes karma, because one will actually know that it was successful. If it wasn't a success, then one will not suffer only. So maybe, probably, this is my realization, maybe I'm not wrong, you know, only Krishna knows that. But I felt that, okay, maybe I took that karma, because never in my life I had developed such kind of intense suffering. It was never, like, even now, that was the only time. After that also, I have never developed that kind of problem. Never. So basically, you know, the conclusion is that, like, I am really afraid of doing ritual ceremony for anyone now. I don't know what is going to happen next. So it is possible, you know.
But we got always in time for the class on Saturday, right?
Yeah, that was like really, I mean,
that
means, you know, actually nothing was there. I don't know. She
mentioned everything that happened.
She, I mean, the doctor just gave me, you know, normal, regular medicine. And I was completely cured. Like, maybe, you know, I don't know what was happening. But no one, like, that Ayurvedic doctor was not able to do anything, you know. And I think generally it is an experience that Ayurveda does not work immediately. It takes a long time. And then obviously, who is going to wait that long time, you know? It does not make sense. If you are suffering very intensely, you have to find out the solution soon. You cannot wait for a long time. So then, one day, you know, finished, like one night, it was gone. So I was so happy and relaxed. My God, it was such a continuously, Prabhu, like not even a few minutes. Itching was there continuously. I was fed up, really frustrated. So, anyways, yeah. And then, see, what happened? Then my birthday came up, because this happened, I think, in the month of September, probably. And then my birthday was in October. So, that particular day, I went to Eco Village, because there was GBC meeting, and then, like, we heard that Guru Maharaj was there, and, like, I think we had... I remember why we went there. So there was a book distribution seminar by Vaisheshika Prabhu in Eco Village, and we were invited for that. So then we went next day, and there was also, you know, GBC meeting was going on. So next day, you know, we attended the seminar, and next day morning I was sitting in the temple and like hearing the Bhagavatam class. I was sitting beside Prabhupada's murti, and then suddenly Maharaj is coming from the behind, you know, backside, and then he sees me, and then, you know, he is like, he touches my body and he's like petting me. So I don't know why he did like that, but, you know, he just did it, and then he went and he sat ahead. Okay. So I was like thinking in my mind that, you know, should I tell my Guru Maharaj that, you know, my grandmother passed away, you know, like, but I was like not sure, you know, what to say, when to say, because he was very busy, you know, in the meetings and all. So I thought, okay, I don't have to say, you know, like, anyways, you know, Krishna knows everything. So then, you know, he, after the Bhagavatam class, he left. I also went somewhere else. I probably went to attend the seminar. And then, when I went to the house, you know, when we returned back, this was on 23rd October, my birthday. And when we returned back, so in the night, so then I slept, you know, and then in the morning, this was 22nd, October, and next day was my birthday. So the morning, actually, when I like woke up, I was so happy. Why? Because I saw a dream, and that dream was so relevant and very extremely, you know, I experienced Guru's mercy, you know, in through that dream. And what happened is, you know, in the dream I saw that Maharaj actually, he calls me and he tells me that, so today is a birthday, and then he embraces me twice. And then, you know, I am just about to tell him that, you know, my grandmother passed away, Guru Maharaj. So before that, Maharaj says that your grandmother had my full blessings. And the dream is over. So I was like, like, you know, these things are very precious moments, you know, in spiritual life. And because, see, generally we don't have so much dreams. And the dream that is so relevant, you know, it is so connected. Like what you desire, you know, if you pray sincerely to Guru, then how Guru interferes. Now, see, so this is called the Guru Tattva principles. Okay. Now, maybe Guru Maharaj might not even know that in the dream, you know, he blessed me like that. He might know, he might not know also. But Krishna did his job, you know, by actually giving that kind of, you know, mercy. So the Guru Tattva has done his job, right? And so it was a, you know, it was a great experience. And I realized, you know, the most important thing, that the Guru Tattva is acting in an amazing way, you know. So that's the reason, from that point onwards, my faith in Guru and Krishna simultaneously, you know, like, that became more stronger. I understood this concept that actually Guru is basically Krishna only. Okay. Guru is the Guru Tattva represented by Krishna. And so, you know, if you follow the instructions of Guru, wherever we are at, the Guru is always connected to us. So, yeah, it was great mercy of the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, that you know, all these things were happening. And I was feeling that probably my grandmother will probably get some kind of, you know, good benediction. And she might, you know, she's probably, and I was actually continuously praying that she should, you know, become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and she should also visit Mayapur Dham. Like, you know, whenever in the next life she will, you know, whichever, wherever she is, but at least she should get attached to Mayapur also. So this was my prayer. Yeah, so now, so see, yeah, I mean, so you can all actually understand the Lord's supreme benediction on this most fallen soul without any qualification. So then, you know, you all can actually understand that, because you are all much more, you know, qualified than me, so how the Lord will reciprocate with all of you. So I'm pretty sure that he will reciprocate very nicely. Okay. So maybe, yeah, so it is like, you know, you might be able to take karma. You know, I think it's up to the Lord. The Lord will decide. But if you are trying to save someone, yeah, then you know, probably you are taking the karma of that person. But you know, while practicing bhakti, it's an automatic thing that everyone who is our near and dear ones will get benefited through that process. Because we know that we are watering the root of the tree. So the water is going to go everywhere, because everyone is a spirit soul. So they are all connected to Krishna. So generally, you know, the soul is actually getting definitely a lot of benefit. Yeah, so see, now I will tell you one thing, that Prabhupada did mention that the spiritual master takes karma of the disciple if they do something wrong, right? Now here in this case, first of all, we are not spiritual masters. Secondly, yeah, we are trying to save the soul, or we are trying to benefit the soul somehow, not by our own strength, but by the strength of our Gurujan. And thirdly, the person is not doing anything wrong, you know, because he is not yet initiated, right? So he's living a normal life and he's not doing anything wrong. So these two circumstances are actually not there, that, you know, the guru is, we are acting as guru and then the person is doing something wrong. It does not, you know. So now the process of bhakti, see, it is said that the guru is taking karma, but actually, see, it's quite simple that the guru does not even have to take karma, because anyways your karma will go away by the process of sadhana bhakti. Because when you start the process of sadhana bhakti, karmas are automatically erased unless you commit offenses. And the technique and the process by which the guru is taking away your karma is basically, he is actually giving you knowledge. And through that knowledge, you are able to discriminate and then you are making choices. So through those choices, you are ignoring or you are, you know, rejecting whatever is unfavorable for Krishna consciousness, and that's how the karma is getting washed off. Okay, so that way also we can say that, you know, by knowledge, the ignorance is destroyed. And you know, because the root cause of suffering is what? Avidya. Avidya means lack of knowledge or ignorance, right? So that ignorance is destroyed when the guru is giving knowledge to us. When he is training us in spiritual life, that ignorance is destroyed. And through that ignorance, suffering is also destroyed. Okay, so yeah, so technically, you know, whenever we are preaching someone, benefiting someone, we have to take some karma. Okay. But to what extent, that is dependent, you know, on the situation. So that's the reason, see, I always mention, I suggest that don't try to save others. Okay. If you want to benefit others, or if you want to, so devotees are not supposed to transfer their bhakti to others. Okay. At least not the, you know, not from the regular sadhana that we do. So we cannot say that this chanting of, you know, the 16 rounds is dedicated to this devotee. If you dedicate, then you yourself will also fall down. Okay. But after 16 rounds, whatever extra rounds you are chanting or whatever bhakti you are doing, you know, extra bhakti you are doing, and if you are offering that to the devotee, then two things are there. First of all, the potency will depend on the purity of the devotee. Okay, which means, you know, the advancement of the devotee. How much potent your transfer is going to have effect, that will depend on your own sadhana or your own purity or your own advancement in Krishna consciousness. And secondly, you have to always, even if you are trying to transfer our, you know, potency, it should be done in a very humble and prayerful mood. Okay, now see, first of all, there is no question of Madhyama and Kanishtha transferring their potency. The Uttamas only, you know, they can do it, because it is mentioned in the Shastra that those who are offenseless in their demeanor and those who are their pure devotees, they only can transfer their potency. Yeah. So those who are committing offenses, they are not supposed to transfer anything, you know. And the moment you start feeling that you can transfer, it means you are in illusion. Okay, so what you can do is you can do something extra, additional devotional practices. And you can pray to the Lord that give the credit of this extra thing to that devotee. Okay, you can just pray. We cannot say, well, you know, I have done so, like I have chanted extra 64 rounds. So, you know, technically that person should go back to Vaikuntha. So you cannot say like that, okay? You have to be in the prayerful mood. You will feel that 64 rounds also, if you chanted, you will feel that it does not have any potency. So you are requesting the Lord, praying the Lord that please at least give some kind of benefit. Right? Like that. Okay? Okay. So, any question or comment on this?
Prabhuji, I have one question. Similar like that. One person told me to bring Kanti Mala for her from temple. But she is eating onion, garlic and tea and coffee, everything she is taking. Not non-veg. She's vegetarian, but she's consuming onion, garlic, and so I told her that if you will wear Kanti Mala, you have to stop this thing. So she said, no, someone told me to, if you wear, you will wear Kanti Mala, you will be, means, you don't have any disease like that, she told me. So should I give her or not, no, Prabhuji?
Okay, so again, I can give my own example. Okay, I will give my example in two cases. First is that I myself was having onion garlic and I was wearing Kanti Mala. Second example is that recently I had one of my close friends, you know, we had met in Vrindavan in the month of November. So he was along with his brother-in-law and so he wanted to buy Tulsi Mala. So I told him that generally whoever is wearing tulsi mala, they should not eat onion garlic. Okay. But at the same time, so he was, you know, he said, okay, you know, like if you are saying then, you know, maybe I will not wear. But I understood that, see, you cannot, if you try to advise others, the more you try to advise, the more they will not follow that. The tendency is like that. Okay, because we are all rebellious in our nature. If you want to do something, we'll do it anyhow. So I told him that, see, generally this is the rule. Okay, I didn't tell him that you should not wear, you know, because you are having onion garlic. But I told him that generally this is the rule. But if you want to wear, you can wear it. But be ready. You know, if tomorrow the purification happens, you should be willing to give up onion garlic. And then that made complete sense to him. And he told me, yeah, you know, like if automatically things will happen, then, you know, like probably I will give it up. I said, okay. So what I did is, I was neutral in this advice. Neutral means I told him the truth about it. And at the same time, I also did not discourage him to wear tulsi mala. Because, see, wearing tulsi mala is also important limbs of bhakti. And, you know, if someone has that faith for tulsi maharani, then things will happen gradually. Okay. Time will come when probably they will give up onion and garlic, as it happened with me also. So, you know, when I started reading Bhagavad Gita, after some time, I developed a desire to wear tulsi mala because I saw that tulsi mala in every devotee's neck. And I think Prabhupada also stated many times in his purports that devotees generally wear tulsi mala. And he is also probably describing the benefits of tulsi neck beads. So then I also thought, okay, I also would like to wear. So then when I was reading Bhagavad Gita, I was not even connected to ISKCON technically, and I was not even connected to devotees, but I started wearing and visiting temple. And then later, I think after 1 month or something, I immediately went to the US. Now, in the US, as we know, generally the devotees, they don't advise negatively. Like generally the mood is that they will encourage that, you know. In India, like there are so much, you know, advices, suggestions, free of cost. Even if you don't ask, still they will give you, okay? And they will also discourage you, like anything, in India. Because that's just the mentality of our Indians. But in US, they will not do like this, you know. And generally the devotees are quite merciful and very practical. And so they will encourage also. So now I was wearing, no one told me ever that I am supposed to not wear Kanti Mala. So I was wearing it, I didn't even know. After some time, you know, that I understood that we should not have onion garlic. But I was continuing to wear it. And then finally what happened, you know, after initiation, I gave up everything. So it's a different thing that I was, you know, I was like sincerely trying to accept the path of Krishna consciousness, you know, through the teachings of Prabhupada. So I was doing everything, like I was chanting, then hearing and, you know, reading. But the chanting also started, see, 2007 I went, August, and chanting I started 2008, January. I started with one round, okay, and gradually, so, and I took initiation in 2010. Till the time of initiation, I was actually having onion garlic. Not frequently, sometimes. In any case, actually, I had some allergy also, right from the beginning. You know, whenever I used to add garlic and onion, I immediately got a lot of allergy. So it was affecting my throat. So I was not having it, and I did not like it also so much. But whenever, you know, we went to Indian restaurant outside, because there was no option. So, you know, without onion garlic was not there. So we had to consume it. So we did it. So, but after initiation, completely gave it up. Okay. So it is like that. So it is, you know, difficult. See, we have to also understand the person's attitude. We cannot advise a person unless we know their nature, unless we know their attitude. So like, you know, okay, one more example I can give. That one, I was talking to one Mataji in the temple today. And she has service of making garlands. So one lady came, and so she told this Mataji that, you know, Mataji, actually I have, you know, an intense desire to serve the Lord. I really like to make garlands. So can I also start serving, you know, by making garlands and offering to the Lord? So Mataji said that actually, Mataji, you know, I'm not the right person, and you know, you have to speak to the authority, and they will decide. I cannot actually decide. Because, see, everyone knows that garland making means it's a business of initiated devotees, generally. Okay? Or devotees who are really committed to it. So it requires some kind of... So now, when she was speaking to Mataji, I did not tell her anything. I was neutral again. Why? Because, see, first thing, I see the bhav of the devotee. You know, if someone will come up and say that they want to do some service for the Lord, I will definitely encourage that. Okay. But in this case, I did not say anything because I knew that tomorrow if something wrong will happen, then I should not be blamed.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I'm not involved, you know, I'm not authority here. So why should I necessarily encourage her? So I was neutral. Again, I did not tell her that, okay, you can do, you can come. So, and second thing is what Mataji was saying, that also makes sense completely, you know, because obviously we require authority. Now, see, people have enthusiasm for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. Then what about months and years? Because these kind of services require a lot of commitment and dedication. And it also requires to follow certain rules and regulations. Okay. If one person is willing to do it, then it is good. Otherwise, you know, otherwise what is the point? You know, it's just a over-enthusiasm thing. So I told, you know, after she went away, and I told Mataji that, Mataji, you know, so I actually really appreciate the bhav of that Mataji, but I did not tell anything because I can understand that, you know, authorities, you know, permission is required. So I told her that, see, actually, in my understanding, this Mataji is probably looks like a Gujarati Mataji, and generally Gujaratis, they don't have bad habits, like, you know, especially the elder generation, you know, they don't have any bad habits, like regulatory principles they are following and all that. And in Gujarati, generally, you know, it's like the meat eating is not there. So I told Mataji that, you know, in this case, probably, so, you know, you can consider because she's like not, she might not have, you know, non-veg and all that. But these are important factors to serve the deities, right? Rules and regulations are important. But now we cannot predict we cannot generalize this because every devotee is unique for the Lord. And the Lord is Bhavagrahi. So he is actually, first he sees the bhava of the devotee. Okay, rule regulation comes later. Like, first the Lord will, even probably the Lord will also allow devotees to serve. Even though they are in, you know, contaminated situations. Now, see, certain things even I didn't know in the initial days of Krishna consciousness, but I was doing it. And then I understood that I'm not supposed to do it without, you know, a particular qualification or without, you know, being purified in a certain circumstance. One should not do like that, okay? But it was, this was a revelation to me. You know, it was a, nobody told me that. Like, nobody chastised me and nobody told me that, okay, you're not supposed to do. One thing is that, see, one more thing. When I was in the U.S., before initiation, can you imagine, can you believe that I was not even aware that we are not supposed to wear leather jackets? So when I went from India, I purchased some good leather jacket, okay? And when I was there in the US, the temple president, she never told me anything. But I had Indians, you know, without anything, free of cost, they will give advice. So a couple of times they told me that, you know, you are not supposed to wear leather jacket. So, but I realized it, you know, that, but it took such a long time for me. Maybe, you know, I went in January 2011, and what happened, see, I will tell you, this is also another thing which is interesting. I had come to the realization that, I should not wear leather jacket, but it was so dear to me, you know, like, it was my favorite leather jacket, and it was Prorogue leather jacket. It was a bit costly also, and it was like I was looking very smart in that. So I was very attached to that. So although I knew it, but I didn't want to give it up somehow. So then what happened? So what happened, you know, when I came from Tucson, you know, when I returned to Mumbai from US, while, you know, when we left the temple and then we were going to airport, in the middle, I realized that I had forgotten my jacket behind. So that's how Krishna took away the jacket also. And then I never repented also about it. See, because that time I had already got initiated. So it's gone, you know, and then I understood that actually we're not supposed to wear leather jackets. So it took a lot of time for me to understand certain things, and, you know, especially about the rules and regulation thing, because it takes maturity and the proper knowledge. You know, it all depends on how you are trained in your house. In your house, if you are not trained thoroughly, then these things are difficult to realize, get realized. Okay, so it all depends on situation. Every devotee is different, and we have to guide the devotees accordingly. We should not try to unnecessarily discourage someone. And at the same time, if we are not the authorities, and if the service and the position demands some kind of permission, then we have to also, we have to also consider that. So we have to be careful about it. Okay. So
yeah,
I hope.
Yeah, Prabhuji. When I went to counter in temple, the Mataji told me one thing, that if you will give her the Kanthi Mala, you should be ready to share aparad karma with her.
Okay. So, see, first of all, as I said, that you have to make sure it is your responsibility. You know, if you know the person, you know, and so, you know, the way I guided, you know, my friend's brother-in-law, so in the same way, you can also tell the reality to the person. And you can tell him that, okay, you know, finally it is your wish, you know, if you would like to wear it. So what we are doing is, we are not discouraging the person. At the same time, we are also not responsible for that activity.
No, that Mataji told me if she wants to wear, she should come and she will ask and we will encourage her to do chanting and everything. Then afterwards she can put the Tulsi Mala.
That you can tell Mataji also that Tulsi is also pure devotee of the Lord. And Tulsi Maharani also, you know, gives a lot of mercy. So it is not necessary.
Yeah,
in my case, what happened? Right? So certain devotees, if they are orthodox, if they are very conventional, traditional, then they will say something, let them say, you know, we don't have to worry about it. We have to worry about our Gurujan, what they are telling us. See, that's the reason we don't have to ask each and every devotee, or we have to be concerned about the devotee's opinion. We should be concerned about our Gurujan's opinion. If they are telling us something, we should do it. Okay, but you know, so there is a variety of devotees, and the unlimited devotees are there. You know, so everyone will have different opinion. Whom are you going to follow?
Oh, yeah.
Now, see,
she's not able to go to temple. That's why she told me that if you are going to temple, please bring
karma. See, now you shared this with me. So I told you, you know, I shared with my my understanding about it. And I don't think that, you know, you have done anything wrong, you know, even if you told that. But I think it is better to inform them that, you know, this is the standard. So, you know, keep that in mind, and at the same time, not take any, you know, so you are not forcing that person to take the Tulsi Mala, in spite of knowing that person is eating onion garlic. So if you are doing like that, then okay, you are really responsible for the karmas. But see, one more thing is there, please note, that these things are now, you know, they are not so much important, because ours is a preaching moment, and for preaching purpose, certain things can be adjusted, okay? So what is more important, what is higher purpose, is actually that too you give mercy of the devotees to everyone, whoever is willing to connect to the Lord in any way. So we have to give them the mercy actually. That advantage has to be there. At the same time, we also tell them what you are supposed to avoid. Right? So, yeah, so don't worry about it. You know, like, I am pretty sure, you know, what about this thing, where, you know, a person goes, like, you know, for example, I went in the temple, I asked for tulsi beads, and I started wearing it. So who is responsible now?
You are, sir. That means you started, you are, sir, from Prabhuji. If you are telling to someone to please bring one Kanthi Mala for me, and you are taking everything, you are not following any rules, then who will take the karmas and who will, that's the question.
No, it is not like that. You know, see, the devotees, they are not supposed to give. If I am asking for Kanti Mala, if I am asking for chanting beads, and the chanting beads, if I am asking for Tulsi beads, they are not supposed to give me.
Okay.
Because, yeah, so why they are giving? Why they are providing for, you know, openly they are providing this.
Mm-hmm.
So that should not be done. It should not be allowed. So they will also take some karma.
Okay.
You know, whoever is the authority or whoever is.
Yeah.
So in that sense, like, you know, as we know that if someone is eating an animal, you know, if someone kills an animal, eats the animal, then the butcher is responsible, the person eating is responsible, the person delivering the animal. Everyone is responsible. So similarly, same thing. If you are, see, if ISKCON is so much bothered about rules and regulations, then they should have strictness everywhere. They should never allow anyone to take Tulsi Mala with them. Why they are doing it, you know, giving it for freely to everyone. So the idea is that ISKCON is actually a preaching movement, you know, and so certain things are like, okay, you know, it's understood. That we don't have to show, see, strictness will have more discouraging effect rather than to allow people to, you know, do what they want to do. Because, you know, as you know that, you know, if you chastise someone because they are willing to see Mala and they are not following, they will be discouraged. They will not probably want to come to ISKCON again. They will not want to see the devotees also. Right? But if you encourage them in a nice way, in a proper way, even though you know that they are... See, these things we should overlook. Every devotee has some anartha, they have conditioning, they are, you know, what is important, you have to encourage them for hearing and chanting. Hearing, chanting, reading, if they are doing that, you inspire them in that way. Like these rules and regulations so much initially. So, okay, you have done your task, you know, you have told them that, okay, you're not supposed to eat onion garlic, try to avoid as much as possible.
No.
But
they don't have any interest in devotional service and devotion and chanting. They just want to put the Kanti Mala because they will be away from some disease like that. Like nowadays,
who knows? Mataji, who knows? They might get connected to Bhakti also by Tulsi Mala.
Maybe, of course. Yeah,
see,
of course.
It is, I will tell you one thing, that some people, they have devotion for certain things, like, you know, for example, Tulsi. Or, for example, some will have devotion or affection for devotees. Some will have affection for certain limbs of bhakti. So, what basically happens is, if they have that attachment, they should cultivate that attachment, and devotees should encourage that cultivation. Okay, rather than focusing on what they are lacking. Because Prabhupada also said, you know, so many times, rules regulations should come later. First, start doing things that you like in Krishna consciousness. So someone might like service, right? As this Mataji came up and she told that I would like to serve the deities. You know, I like making garlands. So the most important thing is that connect her now, you know, immediately. She is willing to do service to the Lord. Why are you telling her that, okay, you know, we have to follow this, that, this, you know. Let her get connected, you know. So that is more important. Right? Now, if you focus on what they are not following or what, you know, certain things that they are doing, even if, see, in my opinion, even if they are having non-vegetarian, let them connect to Krishna. Like Prabhupada used to say, if a drunkard is habituated to drinking, let him drink, but let him think that this drinking is actually Krishna, because Krishna is the ras, is the juice of this drink. So Prabhupada said, a drunkard is obviously not going to give up drinking. If you go to a drunkard and tell him that give up your drinking, he will say, get lost. I don't want Hare Krishna. Right? But if you tell him that, oh, okay, so you are habituated to this, you know, think that this is, you know, the Ras is Krishna. And so he will start remembering the Lord, you know, and he will think, oh, such a nice thing. The devotees told me, now I can, but gradually that remembrance will purify that person. So that is what Prabhupada recommended. That is the process that we are supposed to follow. Otherwise, if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have done that, if Prabhupada would have done that,
how many
of us would be on the
level?
And you know, as actually yesterday only we had a nice discussion about sinful activities. Right? So, Chintamani Mataji, you know, can share something. That what is actually sinful activity? So, Mataji, would you like to share? Or Sudhami Mataji, she was also there. Yes, Mataji. Hari Bol, are you there, Mataji? Chintamani Mataji, are you there?
Yes,
Prabhu. So, yeah, so what did I mention about sinful activity? Sudhami Mataji, Chintamani Mataji.
People with
Sudhami Mataji, are you there?
People with sinful activities can also become devotees, provided they follow Guru Sadhu Shastra.
But I also shared something very important. Swati Mataji was also there. So, Sudhami Mataji, are you there?
Yes, Prabhuji.
So, what did I share yesterday?
Even though the people are the sinful activities is there, but through the association with the pure devotees or devotees, that they will give that knowledge so that the ignorance will be removed.
I discussed something else also, something very important. I was asking the definition of sinful activity, the different forms of sinful activities. Surprised to know that you have forgotten just in one day. See, this is the memory of our Kali Yuga devotees and people. So that's the reason every day one has to hear. Otherwise one will forget. I explained this point almost for 15-20 minutes. So there are two types of sinful activities. One is gross.
Gross and subtle.
One is subtle.
One is subtle.
Right? So, see, what is the meaning of this? A devotee might be not committing gross sinful activity. But who knows, in a subtle way, a devotee might be committing sinful activities also.
Mm-hmm.
So then now the question is that what is subtle sinful activity? Okay, the question is what is sinful activity? Can someone define what is sinful activity? Pop.
I would imagine probably anything that takes you away from Krishna.
Lord, yes. That's a wonderful answer. Okay, perfect. So basically, the tendency to engage separately from Krishna is sinful. Now tell me one thing, how many devotees are pure devotees here? How many devotees, they are only thinking to satisfy Krishna's senses? Each and every desire that they have is just to satisfy Krishna's desire. How many devotees are doing like that?
I'm sure I've fallen very much in this mango season.
Yeah, so actually you should give up mangoes now for the entire life. Because
I will offer to Lord first.
Okay, yeah. So everyone knows that we are trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. There is no doubt about it. Okay, we have ulterior motives, we have desires. we are not completely purified. So that means that we are sinful. And everyone knows that, you know, we are also lusty. You know, like the lust is not expressed outside, you know, because the, you know, marriage is restricting that thing. But like, yeah, we know that we are lusty also. So then, where is the question of not doing any sin? Only when we become completely purified, then only the sin is completely gone. So sinful activity can take two forms, gross and subtle. So subtle, in the subtle way, means that we, even though we might not be, you know, doing some gross sinful activity, but the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, the desire to exploit others is also there. The desire to become master, to have followers, to have name, fame, that is all to have desire to enjoy through ego, right? Because it is giving us pleasure. So ideally, whatever, when Krishna is pleased, that time we should be pleased. Now that would mean that even if someone will come and insult us, we should be happy if Krishna is happy through that. But we are not happy, we are sad. So this subtle tendency of enjoying separately from the Lord is also sin. It is just not manifesting outside, but internally we are all sinful. Okay, so please note that when you judge someone, you know, when you are preaching, one should never look at a person's sinful things. If they have a right attitude, they have a service attitude, they want to connect to Krishna somehow, we should always fan the spark, as Prabhupada always did. Right? So we should not focus too much on rules, regulations. Now, see, even my auntie also. Now, she's generally, she has, you know, she lives in the house with her husband. And, you know, my uncle is actually he's quite a materialistic person. Too much. Matlab, you know, he's quite oriented towards money and all that. His main focus is money. So in that association, my auntie is also affected. And she also, in the house, because no one is having, my uncle is also having onion garlic. So she also consumes onion garlic. But I make it a point never to tell her about that thing. You know, I just try to connect her as much as possible. So I took her to Darshan Eye Camp, you know, because I know that she has nice bhav for the Lord, you know, nice appreciation for the Lord, devotees, prasadam, seva and all that. And dham, you know, so she had a wonderful time. She had an outstanding experience in Darshan Eye Camp. And now when we have come back here, so I tell her that the devotees are remembering you, you know, they are asking you to come to temple. So that way I'm, you know, like trying to encourage her. But if I tell her that, okay, you know, you have been to Darshan Eye Camp, why are you continuing your onion garlic? If I start saying all these negative things, she will get upset about it. And or maybe she is not in a situation right now where she wants to leave it. But after some time, automatically she might leave, you know, because the Lord will make that arrangement, you know, if she will sincerely try to please the Lord. So maybe, you know, the association, she'll find a more favorable association in the future, and gradually she'll automatically leave things. So don't, you know, focus on these things more. Focus more on how we can actually try to connect the devotees to the Lord. Okay? So does this make sense? Okay, any other devotee? They had any question or comment? Okay, so Chintamani Mataji had, I think, three questions, right? Out of which one we have covered.
Yeah, one we have covered. Second is, should I read the second?
Yeah.
Where exactly is Yamlok situated amongst the 14 planetary systems? After passing away, does the soul travel straight to Yamlok? Who guides the way, Yamadutas or Super Souls?
Yeah. So Yamloka is situated right below, at the lowest level, after the Patal planetary system, because there are lower planetary system, and so there are 14 planetary system. We know that above Bhoomandala there are the upper planetary system, and below Bhoomandala there is a lower planetary system. In the lowest position is Patal, amongst the different lower planetary system, and below Patal is the Hellish planets. There are 28 Hellish planets, and in the Hellish planet there is one. I think the abode of Yamraj is called as Shamyamani, something like that. So he is residing there, and he is the one in charge of giving the reactions of the sinful activities to the people. Okay, so now, so that 28 Hellish planets along with Yamraj abode, they are above Anantashesh but below Patal Loka. Okay, if you happen to see the video, then you will actually understand very clearly. But it is at the lowest position in the material universe. Okay. And regarding, the soul passing away, see, that will, if the soul goes to Yamraj. Now, first of all, the person does pious activities. So, a person might have both things. He might have pious activity, he might have impious activity. And depending on that, he will be taken to the respective abodes. So, there is one example in Shastra where someone was taken to Yamloka and he was asked this question. I think it was Sandalya Rishi, probably, who was, by mistake, he was actually judged by Yamraj. And then he cursed Yamraj that he will come as Vidura. He had to come to the material world because he had mistakenly judged. Yeah. So I don't know if this was Sandalya Rishi or some other person, but Yamraj actually told him that, what do you want to experience first? Do you want to experience hell first, or you want to experience pleasure first? So he said, I would like to experience hell first. Okay. And you undergo pain first, and then after that you experience pleasure. So that is also there. That concept is also there. And in certain cases, if a human being is very pious, then there's no question of Yam Dutas coming and taking the soul to Yam Loka. They will directly go to the upper planetary system. Okay. So pious activities, if a person has performed pious activities, then they will directly go to upper planetary system. If it is mixed activity, then they will also go to Yam Loka, and where they will be given that choice. And if they are sinful, then definitely they go to Yam Loka. Okay?
Super soul doesn't play a part.
Huh?
The super soul is not the guiding factor here. It's a Yamaduta.
Yes, they are taking the service. They are taking the responsibility of punishing different living entities for their karmic reaction, karmic activities. So, it is super soul is just like a watching bird. Super soul does not do anything. He will just, so when the time comes, he will guide people from within, so that they are acting according to their previous impressions. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the super soul also acts as a guru, for sincere devotees. So, like that.
Okay.
Harishna?
The third question I had was, does the Brahman effulgence emanate from only Lord Krishna or from all Vishnu Tattvas?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Does the Brahman effulgence emanate from only Lord Krishna or from all the Vishnu Tattvas?
Okay, so what is the answer to this question? Any devotee would like to comment?
Lord Krishna.
And in that effulgence, all Vaikuntha.
Lord Krishna.
Huh?
And in that Brahman effulgence, all Vaikunthas are there.
Okay. Is that Ujjala Madhuri?
Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, okay. How is your health, Madhuri?
Yes, Prabhu, today is fine, Prabhu.
Okay. Good. So, see, so Ujjala Madhuri is saying that in that effulgence, all the Vaikuntha planetary system is situated.
Yes.
So, and Rajiv Prabhu is saying that Krishna is actually the source of Brahman effulgence. Any other devotees?
But Vishnu also has similar effulgence.
Okay. So Mataji is saying Vishnu also has similar effulgence. That is also right.
That is the thing, because there is always the reference of glaring effulgence from this one, that one. So we know that Krishna is coming from Krishna Loka, and the Vaikuntha planets up to this thing, the Brahman effulgence is there, up to the Virat river. But then the Vishnu Tattvas also, they are said to be effulgent.
Correct. Yeah, they are also self-effulgent. So because we know that in the Vaikunthas, there is no sun, moon, electricity, fire and all. Right? Every planet is self-effulgent. So effulgence is also coming from Vishnu. So what is the answer? So, see...
emanating from Krishna, like the Vishnu Tattvas are also coming from Krishna only.
Yeah, so that reconciles everything.
Yeah.
Just as you know, you are lighting the second candle from
one
first candle.
And,
another candle, yeah. Brahma Samhita explained, you know, simple thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wherever from, so ultimately it is coming from Krishna. So now by Krishna's potency, all the Vishnu. Also, you know, they, because they are not different from Krishna, you know, all the Vishnus are the same, you know. So everyone has the effulgence also. They have the same potency.
Yeah.
But the source is Krishna. This is basically, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Or you can say the philosophy of the Rudra Sampradaya, Kumar Sampradaya. That Krishna is supreme. But Ramanujacharya, you know, they believe that Vishnu is the supreme. So, in go, you know, whatever it is, but yeah, ultimately it is the same person, you know, like they are all the same person and the source is one. Okay. Okay, now any other question?
I have one question. Actually, there is one friend here, and she was in India, and I'm just giving a brief about her background. So,
yeah, Bhakti.
She was, no, not Bhakti.
Okay.
Chinkita is her name. So, actually she was connected to devotees in Mumbai, and then she was connected to Chaupati ISKCON. And then she was even aspiring from Radhanath Swami Maharaj. But then later she got shifted for her master's and everything. She came to US. So then she lost all the contact with devotees and everything. But then she never got herself connected and everything. Then later now she got married and she shifted to California. So she was chanting, she was aspiring, she was following four regulative principles, and since then she's actually following all four regulative principles even now. So she fasts on Ekadashi, she does everything. But the problem is now she's not chanting any rounds. So, and she is very keen to come back to this Krishna consciousness that she's left, or somehow which got left. So now what is happening is, where she's staying, there is one Mataji who is behind her and who says her that you have to chant all 16 rounds, which is not possible. All of a sudden, she can't start 16 rounds. So
we suggested her that, okay, whatever rounds you start those rounds. And as you suggested in last few lectures with some Mataji's question, that was Mataji's son spoke to you. So you suggested that you should read, and that will give you, that will tell you that, that will make you chant more better way or regularly. So we suggested her to read every day Bhagavad Gita. So she said, I've already read Bhagavad Gita for 4-5 times, so I want to read Bhagavatam. So I said, okay, read Bhagavatam or Krishna book, whatever suits you. So now she's got so many health problems that she's not able to chant or read anything. So how do we take it? Like, she wants to come back. She's following all four positive things. And her husband is not a devotee. But he's very much favorable. He himself tells her, you chant, if you chant, you feel happy. I can see you happy. So you should chant. He always says that to her, but she is not able to do that. So how do we deal with her now?
Yeah. So the simple answer is that, as Prabhupada says, everyone has to fly their own plane.
Hmm.
She already knows what she's supposed to do, but still she does not want to do.
She wants to do, and every day she messages us saying that I want to do, or maybe she's decided to do 8 rounds, and she's been doing 8 rounds last 2 months. Maybe 1 or 2 days in between, because of her health was too much degraded, she couldn't do those rounds, but she compensated those on next day, like by chanting 16 rounds. So she did that. She's doing rounds. She's not able to read. Then she's doing rounds.
So she is doing something. No, I thought she's not doing anything. So she's chanting every day.
Again, she is not able to read. Her health is going down and down. Then she feels, even if I'm doing so much for Krishna, I'm doing rounds, then still why so many problems with my health? I don't know what to answer her right now.
If she cannot read, then she should hear.
Okay.
Hearing is the beginning of spiritual life, and there is no advancement possible without hearing. That is for sure. You see, one can chant, and even Karmi is also chanting. So many other people are also chanting God's name every day, but they are not able to understand anything, because they are not able to understand who is God, and they are having their own conceptions about God. So that's the reason they are always in doubt and anxiety. So without proper sambandhyan, there is no question of effective chanting also.
Mm.
So she has to hear. There is no shortcut for that. In fact, it is very strange to say that a person likes chanting but does not want to hear. That is extremely funny, because what you are saying is you don't want to hear about the Lord and you want to chant about the Lord. That is ridiculous. So, you know, Prabhupada also says, so many times he said in the Bhagavatam Purport also, which I have posted in the group, today also I posted Prabhupada's Purport. What does he say? That one should actually hear about the Lord's external energy first. Then one should start relating with the Lord about internal energy. So before going to the pastimes of the Lord, one should actually try to understand how the Lord has created the universe and what is the external energy of the Lord. So by meditating on that, by hearing about that, one will actually become free from illusion. So it is not possible, it's impossible that someone can actually advance in spiritual life without hearing and reading. So if someone cannot read, you know, in the worst case, at least they have to hear. But, reading helps the person a lot. Now, I am pretty sure that everyone, they have taken their education in school, colleges, universities. So what did they do? Did they only hear and they did not study? So it is, these kind of reasonings, they are all it is all our mind conceptual created reasons. If someone does not want to read, they just find some means. But I'm sure that you know, every educated person, they have studied, even though they did not like to study, but they have studied. And now they are getting opportunity to actually hear about the Lord, which is generally very interesting. It is not like our studies. So I don't understand why people would not like to hear or read. So there is, you know, hearing is the foundation. There is no question of, you know, I know devotees were chanting 64 rounds also, but because they are not connected to any devotee, they are not connected to any guru, their philosophy is something different. At the end of the day, when you talk to them, they will have different concepts about chanting, about Krishna, about, you know, like this person who is chanting 64 rounds sometimes, he also believes in Sai Baba. You know, he has faith in Prabhupada also. He also believes in Sai Baba. And but you know, when you talk about the philosophy, a Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, or accepting a parampara, he is not comfortable with that. So what is the effect of chanting 64 rounds? Even a Mayavadi can also, see, Mayavadi also chant the holy name. They chant more sometimes than the devotees. But what is the effect of chanting? Ultimately, they are always in the conception that the name is actually material form of the Lord. So what kind of purification? Zero. So only when you have proper knowledge, you can actually chant the holy name in a pure way. It's not possible to chant the holy name purely unless one has sambandhyan. So for sambandhyan, one has to have jnana. So they have to hear or they have to read. That's how we attain jnana. There is no other way. It's not that her chanting is going to, you know, Krishna will come and tell her many things. Even if Krishna will tell her also, still she has to hear. So the problem is that people, if they don't like to hear and reading, you know, then it's a major problem. So chanting will have very low effect. So, you know, she has to wait till next birth then. So she has to cultivate that interest, actually. So one has to make her understand and, you know, realize the importance of hearing and reading.
Okay.
Otherwise, we cannot say anything, you know. Many different varieties of people, they chant the holy name. You know, I will tell you one thing. That person who came to my house, you know, Raju Prabhu knows, because he was there at that time, that, you know, Mr. Pradeep Khanna, you know, he comes to our swimming, you know, daily. So, you know, he chants the name of Lord Ramchandra every day. He chants, okay, every day. And, you know, one day in the pool, he was asking me that why did Lord Ram banish Sita? And then why was the need to take test of, you know, Agni Pariksha of Sita? So he was getting a bit aggressive. That why, you know, he's doing like this. And then he said certain things which seemed that, you know, he's actually making Lord Ramchandra like an ordinary person. That Lord Ramchandra is also coming into region. And then he also said that Ramchandra also ate meat, you know, like it's a common phenomena. Like these days, you know, that we hear that people say that Ramchandra is eating meat. He was, you know, the reference is in the Ramayana. But as we know, the Shastric conclusions are completely opposite. So, see, the other extreme view about this is that even if Lord Ramchandra is eating meat, what is the problem? See, God can eat the entire living entities in the entire world. Okay, it does not, but still it will benefit the jivas. So he is not doing it for sense gratification, and it will still benefit the jivas. As you know, we know that Shankara, you know, he drank poison. And Krishna lifted Govardhan. So these activities, they are all transcendental. They cannot be imitated. Even if Lord does something, you cannot question him. Otherwise, you are bringing his personal, you know, the character, you are bringing his character down. Which means that you are actually making him an ordinary person like us. Which is again Mayavad concept. Okay. So now, he has been chanting Lord Ramchandra's name every day since so many years. That is what he has told me. Because that gives him some kind of peace. But he does not even know who is Lord Ramchandra. So what kind of effect the chanting has? So many, you know, our Gujarati Vallabhacharya followers, they are also chanting Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. But they are chanting Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. But surrender aspect has never come into their life. They have never taken Sharanam Mama of the Lord. Because they have never taken any shelter of any guru. Everything is very sentimental about them. They have their own ways. So what is the effect of chanting? Finally they will say, who knows the spiritual world is there or not? Who knows the Lord is there or not? Who knows this happened or not? You ask any Gujarati Vallabhacharya follower devotee, unless they are really sincerely following, no. The majority of the devotees are like this only, Gujaratis. Very sentimental people. You know, they are very fortunate because they have that natural attraction for Krishna. But it should be directed properly. So unless they will hear about Krishna, who is Krishna, they will not understand actually. And because if they don't understand, they will have doubt in the character of the Lord. So they will make the Lord an ordinary person. So that's the reason, you know, it's not possible to advance without hearing and reading. So yeah, so it is, I think, you know, you have to explain to her the importance of, and you have to ask questions to her. So let's say, you know, if she says that, well, I don't like reading or I don't like hearing, then you can ask her questions. So is your chanting revealing things to you? You know, if I ask you questions about Krishna, can you answer those questions? If I ask you some basic questions, will you be able to answer? So she will understand that she cannot answer any questions. Then she will realize that, okay, yeah, she should know all these things. Right? So like that you can tell her.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So any other question? Well, I am surprised to know that devotee Vinod asked me about this recent GBC resolution of somehow removing Bahul Ashtami and replacing it with Chaitra Purnima. So what is the, why did they did like, you know, this after so many years? One thing. And so anyone have any question about that? Or they have all understood?
No, only if you can explain.
Yeah. So other devotees, would you like to hear? Or if someone has understood, then if the devotees have understood, then they can share their understanding.
I would like to hear, Pro.
Sorry? Like to hear, okay. See, where is Vinita Madhuri? Are you there? Got disconnected probably. Okay. See, what happened is basically, see, it is like not that, you know, every Gaudiya Vaishnava they were following Bahul Ashtami. Some of the Gaudiya Vaishnava devotees were actually aware of this and they were actually observing Radhakund appearance on Chaitra Purnima itself. The thing is that we have got these dates from the Gaudiya Panjika, which is actually, it is started by the Chaitanya Math from Mayapur, I believe. Okay. Chaitanya Gaudiya Math, which is the, you know, birthplace, is that the birthplace of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur? Yeah, I think so. He appeared in Mayapur, right? Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur?
In Puri, no, Prabhu. Samadhi place.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he appeared in Puri. That's right. Yeah, he appeared in Puri, but I think it is the, you know, this bhajan study
samadhi.
Of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is Samadhi also, and even bhajan he also did there, because we know that we have this Radhakund, Shyamakund, and Govardhan in the Chaitanya Gaudiya Math. So he did a lot of bhajan there. It was his headquarters, basically. Yeah. So that was the headquarter of
Gaudiya Math.
Yeah, that's right. Headquarter of Gaudiya Math. So that's how ISKCON was also following, you know, these specific dates from the Gaudiya Pandit. Now, see, I don't know, I don't remember if Prabhupada ever mentioned about Bhaulashtami as Radhakund's appearance. If Prabhupada did that, then it can create some kind of controversy. Because if Prabhupada said that, you know, if Prabhupada knew about it and if Prabhupada did not have any issues with that, then ISKCON would have continued observing on Bhaulashtami. You know, if Prabhupada knew about it and he had asked the devotees to observe it, then I think ISKCON had no problems to continue doing this. But I don't know, I don't remember any reference of Prabhupada where he is talking about Bhaulashtami. So, and I don't know if any other devotees also know about it, you know, if they have any reference of Prabhupada. But the problem is that, one thing has to be clarified, that when we talk about ISKCON and Prabhupada as the ultimate authority, so that would mean that, you know, Prabhupada, if he's saying certain things which are different from the acharyas, then it creates a kind of confusion and problem also for ISKCON, because, not for everyone Prabhupada is actually the acharya, although they have respect and they all know that he was a very empowered devotee. But it's ultimately, you know, for them the authority is Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur and his guru, okay, the guru jans beyond Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. So it also requires some kind of shastric manipulation, you know, in the sense that, like, we know that if a guru says something, but if the param guru, if he says something which is contrary to the guru, then the instructions of the param guru should be followed. That is the etiquette. That the instructions of the guru should be replaced with that of the param guru's instruction. So first priority has to be given to the instructions of the param guru, because it is obvious. See, the guru, he says something, and if his guru is saying something else, the guru himself will follow that. Right? It is obvious. So technically speaking, the param guru instruction should override the instructions of the guru. So in our case, our guru is Prabhupada. So if Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says something which is contrary to what Prabhupada said, it cannot be rejected. It has to be considered very seriously. So we have to reconcile that, both things. And in certain cases, we have to probably even override certain things. Okay. So now, that's a very tricky thing. And so I will not comment on it, because I don't know what is the stand of ISKCON GBC with regards to this particular topic. That, you know, if Prabhupada said certain things and his guru, if he is saying something contrary, then whom should we follow? Okay, I know one instance where this has happened. And that instance is regarding the beard of Advaita Acharya. So now Prabhupada makes it clear that Advaita Acharya has beard. But Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, in his commentary to Chaitanya Bhagavat, he very clearly mentions that he did not have any beard. Okay. In fact, I think even in Chaitanya Bhagavat itself, it is mentioned that he did not have beard. Something like that. I there is one resolution the GBC has, you know, passed. And they did research through the eyes of Guru Shastra, and they came to the conclusion that we can continue to worship Advaita Acharya with his beard. Okay. And I had shared this, you know, when we were discussing about the CC class. Long time back, I had shared this with all the devotees. So if someone is interested, I can still share, you know, you can go through that and how, you know, they are coming to this conclusion, you know. So it's very interesting. So now this particular instance, you know, it seemed that there was a difference of opinion between Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. But somehow the GBC concluded, the Shastric Advisory Council, they concluded that even if you are worshipping our Acharya with a beard, it is quite okay. We don't have to make that major transition. Okay. But now in this case, what happened is, so we were following this Gaudiya Pandit, somehow, I think with time, they realized that actually the real Radhakund appearance is actually on Chaitra Purnima. Now, this is very clearly mentioned by our Goswamis in their literatures. So, this thing, you know, about I don't know how, you know, they were just following the Gaudiya Panjik, and they probably never thought about this. But then I think probably there might have been some discussions, some serious discussions about it. And finally, everyone felt that, you know, because we are followers of Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, so we should have, whatever they are writing, we should follow that. So then, because you know, other Gaudiya devotees, they were also following on Chaitra Purnima. And you know, especially the Radhakund Vasis also, they were also following on Chaitra Purnima. So then finally, I think, you know, there was a, there was a research about this. And finally, they concluded that, you know, because our Goswamis, the Rupa Goswamis, obviously, we are Upanudas, right? So if they have said, then we have to follow that. So finally, you know, they have come to this conclusion that it will be followed on Chaitra Purnima. So now, see, difference of opinion, that's another thing. Okay, like for example, there's a different opinion of the place where Radharani appeared. Now, we know that our Gaudiya Vaishnavacharya, they say Raval is the place, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said. Okay, but for the local Vrajvasis or for other devotees in other sampradaya, for them, their guru, their shastra, or their, like whatever the tradition is, they follow that. So now, the Vrajvasis generally, you know, they believe that Radharani took birth in Barsana. Okay. And some Vrajvasis will probably say, who are in Raval, they will say that Radharani took birth here. So again, we'll find, you know, different opinion always existed. And this is not so uncommon because in different kalpas, Radharani must have appeared in different places. So it is all, you know, whatever everyone is saying, it's all true. So, you know, in this case also, it might be possible that, you know, this Radhakund appearance, it might have taken place, you know, during Bahulashtami time. It is probably possible. But because our Goswamis, they have not mentioned about it, I think, you know, what we are doing is we are following and we are making this huge transition. Right? So this is about this Radhakund appearance. So there are different opinions. Like, okay, one more example I can say. So which is the birthplace of Krishna? Where did Krishna take birth? How many of you have gone to Mathura? You all visited Mathura, that jail you have visited?
Yes.
Okay. Rajiv Prabhuji, have you also gone?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, okay. Angel Mataji also. Yes. I think everyone must have gone. Okay, so everyone knows that is the birthplace of Krishna. Everyone knows?
Yes.
That jail.
Krishna's in the world.
But unfortunately, like actually, that is not the birthplace of Krishna.
Really?
Yeah. There is a Potra Kund. Okay, Potra is, you know, technically it means Putra. Putra. Putra means, you know, a son has taken birth. So there is a Potra Kund, which is actually, you know, it is quite near to the place. It is not, it's not the, you know, the jail where the Lord took birth. This Potra Kund is somewhat close to that place, but that is the real birthplace of Krishna. So this is what our acharyas have mentioned. And probably this is also in the Shastra. So not the actual place, you know, where Krishna took birth. Okay, maybe the Shastra will mention that Krishna took birth in a prison house. So that is always true. But the current place is actually not the prison house. The current place is actually the Potra Kund, you know, where Krishna took birth. And that is where the prison house was actually. Okay, so this is according to our acharyas. They explain like that. So Deenbandhu Prabhu also, you know, who is actually, we all know him as the Vrajvasi Baba, you know, of like Vraj. So although being a Prabhupada disciple and American, but he has been residing in Vraj since almost 40 years probably now, 35-40 years. And so he knows like almost every nook and corner of Vraj now. And so he, you know, he has also written a book which is called the Vraj Leela. It's volume 1, volume 2. And he clearly mentions that point in his book, that Potrakon is actually the birthplace of Krishna. And he was also aware that Chaitra Purnima is actually the real day when the Radhakund appeared, actually. He was aware of this. So he used to inform devotees, you know, but because the, you know, officially it was not declared. So that is the reason we continue to do that. So there are many differences of opinions in Vraj, regarding this. Now, similar, another example is that of Mayapur. So now, the current place that we know is the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. But the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas in that area, they say that is not the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. It is, you know, somewhere, it's a different place. So, but we do not agree on that. Okay, so finally, ultimately one has to follow our own parampara and Gurujan, because otherwise there will be confusion. And this different opinion is always going to be there, because there is, we are all individuals, and Krishna is, you know, Krishna likes that. Because, if everyone is one, then where is the variety? There is no enjoyment. Krishna wants to experience different things, so he will create situations like that. So and we can also reconcile by saying that the Lord is appearing at different places in different kalpas, and that's why, and because the material realm is actually not material, you know, the birthplace, the abode of the Lord in the material world is not different from the spiritual world, so everything is eternal in that. So that's the reason, whichever birthplace you go, they are all eternal birthplaces. So it's not that, okay, you know, this was the birthplace only in one particular kalpa, and now it is not the birthplace. You know, eternal pastimes of the Lord. And the Lord is still appearing in these places. So for different devotees with different bhav, the Lord is going to manifest differently. And so that's the reason, you know, we have this, you know, like this. Okay, so does this make sense? Is this clear?
Yes,
sir.
Okay, Rajiv Prabhu and Ujjala Mataji.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Ujjala Mataji, you are there? Okay, and about Lalita Shasti, now the same thing happened. Basically, Rupa Goswami was mentioned in one scripture that Lalita Sakhi is actually 27 days younger than Radharani. So actually they are celebrating Lalita Sakhi just living one day. So like, you know, 2 days younger, but actually she is 27 days younger. So then they have, you know, somehow I think they have just removed the observance of Lalita Sakhi appearance. Anyways, you know, these are all like transcendental things. And but one thing is there, that it's a lesson to be learned, you know, by the GBC. And I think they also realize how important Shastra is, how important it is to, then, you know, when they decide something, they have to make sure that it is according to Guru and Shastra. Otherwise, they will have to change it in the future. So this is, it's a question of faith of so many thousands of devotees. We were going with so much faith. I mean, I have never went in Bahulashtami to Radhakund, but the devotees are going with so much faith. They are waiting till midnight, and then with so much struggle, with austerity, they are taking bath in Radhakund. So then all of a sudden to say that, okay, Bahulashtami is not the day, you know, devotees will get depressed. And they will think, what ISKCON is doing. So, certain things, I think, you know, they have to be careful. Because these things are very important. Like, you cannot just change all of a sudden. So our faith will be disturbed, you know, by this process. So that is the reason we have to always have Guru Shan Shastra. Okay? So I hope all the devotees, while doing the research for their questions, they also go through Guru Shan Shastra. And they quote Shastra extensively as much as possible. Okay? I hope everyone is doing their homework. And they will be able to submit by third week. Right? So, has everyone started?
Not yet, Prabhu.
Yeah, I think you both are in the mood of going for a war to Kurukshetra. So, after finishing the war only, we will start. But, yeah, anyways, you know, you can at least you can keep, you know, asking devotees for references. You know, you can start doing that kind of research, if not getting that information through reading and all. But you can at least start asking devotees. Ujwala Mataji, are you there? I think she has, you have not taken question, Mataji, till now. You have not selected the question.
Yes, Prabhu, you said no, Prabhu, last question. I will put
Okay, last question is Krishna's clarity in Rasiya, right?
Yeah, I will try, Prabhu. As you said, everybody left that question. I don't know. I'll try my level.
Yeah, so you take that question, and I don't know who has taken question number 13. That is also something to do with the Rasila. Or like, what is the question?
Kanna
13
Prabhuji
question.
Kanna Prabhuji has taken that.
Acha, Radha Krishna relationship. Okay. Now,
yes.
Yeah, that okay. 13th is quite okay. 12th is also easy, I think. Okay. 11th. 11, 10, I think everyone has taken now, probably. So, okay. I think Nirvika, she has to make a choice. She has to confirm now. So, let's see. And, yeah, so, you know, if Sanjeev Prabhu and Nirvika Prabhu would also like to participate, then let me know. Then I will have to create two other questions.
14?
Huh?
Swati Mataji put like, okay, I will take 14. We'll take 10, something, two messages
yeah,
are there.
You are going to take 14, right, Mataji? But I think
okay.
The 7 or 8, where one is the reference of Radharani, that question, and there is the reference of Goloka. These two questions, I think one of them, Nirvika, is going to probably address that. But still, one more question remains. I don't know who has taken one of these questions.
Swati Mataji,
she already took. Swati Mataji already took. Swati Mataji is going to answer which question?
10th question.
10th question,
then
okay. I think that one remaining question, I think that is for Anju Mataji. Because she has not taken a question yet. So, can you please inform her, you know, Indian Mataji, can you please inform her that she is supposed to take one question?
Yes, Prabhuji, I will speak to her tomorrow.
And I think the only remaining question is that one of these two, reference of Radharani and reference of Goloka.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can let me know, you know, if Sanjeev Prabhu and Neeraj Prabhu would also like to take a question, then we can add two more questions.
Surely.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, all right. So, you know, we'll continue next time. Thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.